cornucopia of unchallenged false claims.
I was called by the biggest people saying, congratulations, political people. Congratulations, sir, you just won the election. It was 10 o'clock and you looked at the numbers, and I'm sure you felt that way. This election was over. And then they did dumps. They call them dumps, big, massive dumps in Michigan and Pennsylvania and all over.
Yeah, when you get to his age, a lot of your conversation is about the size of your dumps. But
if there's one thing the president knows, it's big, massive dumps. He's taking one on democracy right now. He just can't stand the fact that he's number two.
The state of Arizona certified a win for Joe Biden today. They also just finished the recount in Wisconsin. The recount in Wisconsin cost the Trump campaign $3 million. And the result of the recount was Biden picked up 87 more votes. Money well spent. No president has ever lost one election so many times, but he could be coming back for one more. Not only is he reportedly planning to run again in 2024, he's floating the idea of launching his campaign during Biden's inauguration week because, of course, I think he should do it at Biden's inauguration, at the inauguration itself, run up, grab the mic, and complete the transformation into full orange Kanye already.
The temporary president explained the stakes of the election that is already over.
If I wasn't here, Antifa would be running this country right now. They club people over the heads when nobody's looking, and then nobody talks about it. It's a disgrace. It's absolutely a disgrace. And if I'm not here, I'm sort of your wall.
So he's gone from build the wall to I am the wall. I'll give him this. He's dumb as a brick. Then the president speculated that the conspiracy that he was making up was coming from inside his own administration.
This is total fraud, and how the FBI and Department of Justice, I don't know, maybe they're involved, but how people are allowed to get away from this with this stuff is unbelievable.
To be clear, the president is implicating the Department of Justice in a conspiracy with Biden and I think Venezuela to commit electoral fraud. Now, you'd think the DOJ would want to respond, and you would be right, because today we heard from Attorney General Bill Barr. This afternoon, General Barr told the Associated Press that the Justice Department has not uncovered evidence of widespread voter fraud that would change the outcome of the 2020 presidential election.
Barr also appeared to throw a jab at Trump, saying there's a growing tendency to use the criminal justice system as a sort of default fix-all when people don't like something. They want the Department of Justice to come in and investigate. Oh, man, if Bill Barr had a neck, Trump would totally be ringing it right now. He did call him into the White House. What's left of Trump's legal team immediately put out a statement that said, we have many witnesses swearing under oath they saw crimes being committed in connection with voter fraud. As far as we know, not a single one has been interviewed by the DOJ. With the greatest respect to the Attorney General, his opinion appears to be without any knowledge or investigation of the substantial irregularities and evidence of systemic fraud. Wow. So Bill Barr is part of the conspiracy, too. It goes so deep. Did you have any idea it went this deep, Guillermo?
No, Jimmy, no.
Are you even listening to any
of this? I am listening to you, yes. I am listening to you, yeah. I am always.
William Barr has been one of Trump's most obnoxiously loyal allies throughout. Emphasis on lies and allies. This would be like if Thelma turned on Louise.
Barr went out of his way to discredit one insane claim that the president's lawyers have been pushing about a Venezuelan voting system being programmed to give the election to Biden, saying there has been one assertion that would be the claim that machines were programmed to skew the election results. And DHS and DOJ have looked into that. And so far, we haven't seen anything to substantiate that, adding, to date, we have not seen fraud on a scale that could have affected a different outcome in the election. Fraud on a scale, also known as the president's annual physical. The president's chances of overturning the results were always next to zero, but those chances just moved to downtown zero town.
Everything means less than zero.
Because yesterday, Arizona and Wisconsin certified Biden's win, which means that the president has failed to stop the vote certification in all six states where he contested his defeat. So that's 0-6 in the certifications and 0-3 in recounts, and he hasn't won a single fraud case. He is undefeated at losing. He is the Michael Jordan of playing baseball.
CNN is reporting that one of Trump's closest advisors said the president sees the writing on the wall, which is good. What wall is he seeing it on? The one he didn't build to keep the caravans out? I'm glad he finally sees the writing. I guess once he lost Wisconsin 5 times in 10 days, he realized the end might be near. Not only has Trump lost the election, he even lost Pat Robertson, who, if you don't know, is the 400-year-old host of the 700 Club. Pat nearly died coming up with this football analogy explaining what's going on.
When the game is all over and the total has been posted, he says, I'd like you to change the score. And the people say, no, the game's over. You've lost. That's what we're dealing with here, folks.
So many worthy places to send your money on Giving Tuesday, and none less so than the Donald J. Trump Election Defense Fund. Uncle Scam has been raking it in. He's reported that he's raised $170 million doing this since the election. For what, I don't know. He knows the results aren't going to be overturned, but I guess he saw an opportunity to make money. It's like setting up your bake sale outside of Curves, you know? But maybe that's the reason he won't concede. This is day, 28 of Squattergate. He's still rousing rabble in the various swing states, but the future is not rosy for the president.
So, yes, it's Giving Tuesday, okay? And I'm a, as they call it, a very strong philanthropist, okay? A lot of people have said I put the rapist in philanthropist, okay? And as you know, you probably don't know, you're not very highly educated, I can tell you that. But philanthropy comes from the Greek. Mike, every time I say Greek, he says he loves tossing Greek salads. He loves the feta, right, Mike? It's our great vice president. You're not going to have another one like him with Koala Bear Harris. But philanthropy comes from phila, which is Greek for love, and rapist, which is what I am. So the love of rapping. Okay, that's why I'm such good friends with Ice Cube and Kanye, and you're not. But I want to strongly urge our country on this great day of philanthropy to give to a few charities that we have highlighted on the White House website. Of course, there's Dr. Ben Carson's Doctors Without Morals. We urge you to strongly go there. Great cause. We ask you also, a lot of people do cleft-lipped thing, very gross. We've started a different, more important charity, which is called Augmentation for the Breast Denied. And my daughter Ivanka, by the way, one of our first recipients of this great charity. We give the joy of tasteful double Ds to people who've gone without them for so long. It's a real tragedy. And third is No Child Left Behind, a charity that helps teenage girls, okay, who've fallen on hard times. It was endowed by our late great friend, Jeff Epstein. So we're helping so many people with those charities. So please give what you can, but not you, because your paper's failing. So you probably don't have a lot of money. But do it strongly today. It's called Giving Tuesday, and we'll see what happens.
I'm going to say I lost to the worst candidate in the history of politics. I'm not going to feel so good. Maybe I'll have to leave the country. I don't know.
The preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.
Yes, as my great press secretary, Karen McNamara, said, we're having a Christmas party at the White House, okay? No masks, just great faith. Okay, we'll honor all the reindeer, by the way. Not a vegan Christmas, okay? We're going to eat reindeer and celebrate the great day that Santa and Mrs. Claus gave birth to our great Savior, Jason Christ. Okay? It's called faith. if you can go out and loot and riot and vote for Democrats, we can celebrate Christmas. Right, Mike? You love, right? You said Santa Claus is coming to town, right? You love that. He loves when Santa's coming. But I wanted to also express strong thanks for our great staff. Everybody at the party will be getting coal and presents, okay? Presents as a thank you from the Trump store, mostly copies of The Art of the Deal, and coal for blackface. So it's called a great Christmas celebration. I know you don't like it, but too bad. So Christmas at the White House, it's going to be great. My wife, mesothelioma, is decorated very strongly, even though Christmas English is not her strong point. You know, somebody said ho, 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 and she went back on OnlyFans, so she's not too strong in that department, but she did a beautiful job. I know, Mike, you had some critiques about the design, but that's our great vice president. So Merry Christmas to all the Jewish people, Muslim people, Democrats, and Christians. Merry Christmas, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, for some reason or another, you sound a little taller on radio.
If we make it through December, everything's gonna be all right, I know. It's the coldest time of winter, and I shiver when I see the falling snow. If we make it through December, got plans to be in a warmer town come summertime. Maybe even California. If we make it through December, we'll be fine. Got laid off down at the factory, and their timing's not the greatest in the world. Heaven knows I've been working hard. Wanted Christmas to be right for Daddy's girl. I don't mean to hate December. It's meant to be the happy time of year. And my little girl don't understand why Daddy can't afford no Christmas here. If we make it through December, everything's gonna be alright, I know. It's the coldest time of winter, and I shiver when I see the falling snow. If we make it through December, got plans to be in a warmer town come summertime. Maybe even California. If we make it through December, we'll be fine.
Slamming drunk with milk is chilling, but even cooler was my social worker Dylan. Yeah, I had a social worker cause I had some trouble. Anyone who riff on me, I pop their dome like bubble. He bring me to his crib to watch my favorite races. That's how his daughter Millie became one of my favorite faces. She had the curves that make you wanna take chances. I mean, on her man, I love to make advances. I guess a father must have got the same feeling. I mean, actually finding his own daughter Millie appealing. At the time, no one knew, but it was a shame that Millie became a victim of the touchy-touchy game. Yo, Millie, what's the problem? Lately, you've been bugging. On your dookie earring, someone must be tugging. You were a dancer who could always be found clubbing. Now you're worried now with the frown you're lugging. Come to think your face would stink when deals around you. He's your father, what then happened? Did he ground you? Shouldn't flip on him, cause deal is really cool. Matter of fact, the coolest seller in the school. He hooked up a trick to bring us all the Lacey's. He volunteered to play on Santa Claus and Macy's. Child, you got the best pops anyone could have. Dylan's cool, super hip, you should be glad.
Yeah, it seemed that Santa's ways was parallel with Dylan. But when Millie and him got home, he was more of a villain. While she slept, and he crept inside her bedroom. And he would toss a dimmer, force her to give him headroom. Millie tried real hard to let this hell not happen. But when she fussed, he would just commence to slap.
Yo, Dylan, man, Millie's been out of school for a week, man. What's the deal?
I guess he was giving Millie Bruce's time to heal. Of course, he told us she was sick, and we believed him. And at the department store in Santa, we would see him. And as he smiled, his own child was at home plotting. I walked the face of this, cause he was gonna knock him. When I got home, I found she had tried to call me. My machine had kicked to her, hey, how you doing?
Sorry.
I tried to call the honey, but her line was busy. I guess I had to make you some bug out on Dylan.
I received a call from Mrs. Sick herself. I asked her how was she recovering her health. She said that what she had to ask would make it seem minute. She wanted to talk serious, I said go ahead, shoot. She claimed I hit the combo dead upon the missile. Wanted to know if I could get a loaded pistol. That ain't a problem, but why would Millie need one? She said she wanted a pop deal and a heed one. Ran some style about him, pushing on a private. Look, honey, I don't care if you kick five fits. There's no way that you could prove to me that deals flip. He might be the bunt, but your jeans he wouldn't rip. You're just mad, he's your overseer at school. No need to play him out like he's someone cruel. She kicked that she would go get it from somewhere else. Yeah, whatever you say, go for yourself.
Macy's department store, the scene for Santa's kisses, and all the little brats demanding all their wishes. Time passes by as I wait for my younger brother. He asks his wish, I waste no time to return him back to mother. As I'm jetting, Millie floats in like a zombie. I ask her what's her problem, all she says is where is he? I give a point, she pulls a pistol, people screaming. She shouts the deal, he's off the hell cause he's a demon. None of the kids could understand what was the cause. All they could see was a girl holding a pistol on claws. Dylan pleaded mercy, said he didn't mean to do all the things that hurt my foot, do nothing but cling to. Millie bucked him, and with the quickness, it was over. It's over. It's over. It's over. It's over.
The blues come falling, they fall like drops of rain. Blues come falling, they fall like drums of rain. I've got to spend my Christmas locked up in jail again. In jail on Christmas Day again. Ain't that a pain? Oh baby, baby, baby. Ain't that pain. Oh, Santa, 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 come here to me in jail. Oh, Santa, 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 come here to me in jail. Bring me a Christmas present, someone to go my bed. In jail on Christmas Day again. Ain't that a pain? Oh, baby, baby, baby. Ain't that a pain? This food here, Santa, it ain't fit to eat. This food here, Santa, it ain't fit to eat. Won't you come and bring me a plate of turkey meat? Here on Christmas Day again, ain't that a pain? Oh, baby, 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 ain't that a pain? The jailhouse blues have got me, they've got the best of me. The jailhouse blues have got me, they've got the best of me. My baby doesn't love me, I've got no Christmas tree. In jail on Christmas Day again, ain't that a pain? Oh baby, 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 ain't that a pain?
Listen, the alarm bell on the timer's ringing. That means in 60 seconds we'll be sucked out in space. Help! Help! Kemar!
Oh, Santa, what are we going to do?
What did you say this pipe was?
The air duct. But it's too small for anyone to crawl through.
Thank you. got a beard that's long and white.
Santa's got a beard that's long and white.
Who comes round on special night?
Santa comes round on special night.
Special night, beard that's white.
Must be Santa, must be Santa, must be Santa, Santa Claus.
Santa
wears boots and suit of red.
Who wears a long cap on his head?
Santa wears a long cap on his head.
Cap on head, suit that's red. Special night, beard that's white.
Must be Santa, must be Santa, must be Santa, Santa Claus.
Who's got a big red cherry nose?
Santa's got a big red cherry nose.
Who laughs this way, ho, ho, ho?
Santa laughs this way, ho, ho, ho.
Ho, 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 cherry nose. Cap on head, suit that's red. Special night, beard that's white.
This is Latitude, Longitude. You are listening to WGXC
90.7 FM.
Acre, Catskill, Hudson.
WGXC.
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 Transmission art on air.
The airwaves as art.
Lithuanian composer Martin Rock engineers the collision of ambient noise and cinematic forces in his music, and we'll venture into deep space with him on the next Deep Threes. Plus, music from Christina Pato, VJ Iyer, William Onye Bohr, and Nina Cherry. Deep Threes. Where will the music take you?
Tune in to Deep Threes after the noon news on Monday at WGXC 90.7 FM.
Wave Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of Governor Andrew Cuomo and the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program administered by CREATE, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors, including WGXE sustaining supporters, who provide critical monthly support. Thank you.
WGXE is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Bob Wills Architecture of Rhinecliff, New York. WGXE's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXE as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXE sustaining supporter today. Go to wgxe.org and click Donate. Thank you for your support.
You're tuned to Radio Art, creative transmissions, sound experiments, noise, and more on WGXC 90.7 FM Acre.
German measles, Russian flu, Montezuma's revenge. And why do we say a foreign word whenever someone sneezes? Tomorrow, I'll take a look at swine flu, up close and personal. This is Les Nesbitt.
Pardons and pentobarbital, Trump's lame duck swan song. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan and our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. Pardons and pentobarbital are defining the waning weeks of Donald Trump's presidency. Speculation is rampant over whether Donald Trump will grant himself a preemptive pardon, along with his three oldest children, Donald Jr., Ivanka, and Eric, his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, and his lawyer, Rudy Giuliani. If Trump does, he'll be the first president in U.S. history to pardon himself. Meanwhile, the 54 people on federal death row can expect no such mercy from Trump. He's already executed 8 federal prisoners, ending a 30-year hiatus in federal executions, and intends to kill 5 more before he leaves office on January 20th. 4 of those scheduled to die are African-American men, the other the only woman on federal death row. She would be the first woman executed by the federal government in nearly 70 years. These will be the first federal executions to occur during an outgoing president's lame duck period in over 130 years, since President Grover Cleveland executed 3 men of color. Cleveland lost the election, but would be the only president to win again 4 years later. The federal government's only death chamber at the U.S. Penitentiary in Terre Haute, Indiana, is only equipped to kill by lethal injection. In order to expedite the killing spree, the Trump administration has issued a rule change authorizing federal executions to take place by firing squad, poison gas, or electrocution as well. The change was to take effect on Christmas Eve, highlighting how cruel and barbaric the death penalty is. The effective date was quietly shifted to December 28th. The next federal prisoner scheduled to die is Brandon Bernard on December 10th, International Human Rights Day. All but one of his jurors was white, and now 5 of them say he should not be executed. The next day, December 11th, Alfred Bourgeois is set to be killed. Corey Johnson, whose attorneys say has an IQ of 69 and thus falls below the Supreme Court's standard allowing the death penalty, has an execution date of January 14th. Dustin Higgs is the final of the 4 African-American men Trump intends to execute just days before he leaves office. Higgs is slated to die on January 15th, Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday. Study after study has confirmed deep racial bias in the application of the death penalty, primarily targeting African-American defendants in crimes with white victims.
It is a paroxysm of violence.
That's law professor Sandra Babcock. She founded the Cornell Center on the Death Penalty Worldwide. She was speaking on the Democracy Now! NewsHour. She's an advocate for Lisa Montgomery, the sole woman on federal death row. Babcock described the horrific childhood that Lisa Montgomery suffered.
She was a victim of incest, of gang rape, of child sex trafficking, of unimaginable violence for her entire life before she committed the crime for which she was sentenced to death. She is profoundly mentally ill. She began to dissociate when she was a teenager, when her father, her stepfather, built her a special room off the side of their trailer so he and his buddies could go in and rape her. Her mother sold her to the plumber and to the electrician, told her that she had to earn her keep. The jury never heard about the scope of her abuse or the impact that it had. She is the most broken of the broken.
Lisa Montgomery was sentenced to death in 2008 for the murder of a pregnant woman named Bobby Jo Stinnett. Montgomery lives imprisoned under constant sedation with powerful antipsychotic drugs to treat her severe mental illness, Babcock explains.
There are at least 16 women who have committed very similar crimes. And prosecutors in those cases recognize that these are crimes that are the product of trauma and mental illness.
During a legal visit with Montgomery in November, her two principal attorneys contracted COVID-19. A federal judge granted a delay, but her execution date has now been reset for January 12th. The Pew Research Center recently reported that Trump has used the power of clemency far less than any president in modern history, granting only 28 pardons and 16 commutations, including several to his political allies, less than one-half of 1% of clemency requests. President Barack Obama granted clemency 1,927 times by comparison. Renowned anti-death penalty activist Sister Helen Prejean, author of Dead Man Walking, said on Democracy Now,
I think it's the callous brute force of the mentality of the Trump administration that he just believes that he can use force and kill people. He can use violence and force to make his point. There's no need for these executions to happen. You can't let frail, politically driven individuals decide you and you are going to die.
President-elect Joe Biden has said he supports ending the federal death penalty. It's outdated, racist, and ineffective. Like Donald Trump's presidency, it's time for the death penalty to end. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
One speeding ticket, Columbia County.
Columbia County, everybody gets speeding tickets. How else do they pay for the roads to get plowed in the winter?
You have tuned into the River Newsroom's Hudson Valley Coronavirus Report from Lissa Harris of The River and Roger Hannigan-Gilson of The Other Hudson Valley. Go to theotherhudsonvalley.com or therivernewsroom.com for more information and links to the stories included here. This report is a collaboration with several Hudson Valley journalists, airing on WGXC 90.7 FM at midnight, 5, 7, and 9 a.m., and online in the audio archives at WGXC.org. La Voz, a Spanish-language news magazine covering the Hudson Valley, is translating these roundups and co-publishing them on its website in Spanish at lavoz.bard.edu.
For months, Governor Andrew Cuomo has been talking about positivity rates in New York. The percent of COVID-19 tests coming back positive has been at the heart of state pandemic policy and in the public spotlight as it dropped to reassuringly low levels or spiked to local outbreaks. But the focus is shifting. In a press briefing on December 4th, Cuomo said that the state would move to focus instead on hospital data in the state's 10 regions. Quote, the infection rate is not that relevant anymore, unquote, he said. Quote, we're really focusing on the hospitalization rate and hospitalization capacity, unquote. There's no avoiding it. A state shift in focus from cases to hospitalizations is a more defensive position, signaling that efforts to keep the pandemic under control are falling short. That's because hospitalizations lag behind case numbers. A predictable percentage of the cases reported today will be hospitalizations in a week or two, and deaths in 3 or 4 weeks. The goal of controlling case numbers is to keep them from surging high enough to threaten hospital capacity in the near future, a threshold New York may have already passed. As of December 3rd, which about 26% of hospital beds statewide were still available, with the least capacity still free in Long Island, 21%, and New York City, 22%. There was more capacity in ICUs, with 39% available statewide. Cuomo and state health officials have tasked hospitals recently with adding 50% capacity in case of surges and planning to transfer patients between networks of hospitals if hospitals get overloaded. In Erie County in western New York, where some of the highest positivity rates have been seen in recent weeks, Cuomo ordered elective surgeries to be canceled this week. If there's a silver lining in the state's grim preparations for hospital overload, it's this. The death rate among the hospitalized is down. In March and April, Cuomo said 23% of those hospitalized with COVID-19 died. In recent data, the figure is down to about 8%. The average length of a COVID-19 hospital stay has shortened also from 11 days to 5 days. And the percentage of patients intubated has shrunk from 85% to 45%. Although there is no surefire cure for COVID-19, doctors and medical researchers have learned a lot over the course of the pandemic about how to treat patients so they have a better shot at recovery. The range of effective treatments runs the gamut from cheap steroids to recently developed monoclonal antibodies to practices like proning, flipping patients onto their stomachs so they can breathe better. Nationwide, hospitals in many places have passed the breaking point. The Atlantic reports, quote, "The pandemic nightmare scenario, the buckling of hospitals and healthcare systems nationwide has arrived. Several lines of evidence are now sending us the same message. Hospitals are becoming overwhelmed, causing them to restrict whom they admit and leading more Americans to needlessly die," unquote, write Robinson Meyer and Alexis Madrigal, two Atlantic writers who are also co-founders of the COVID Tracking Project. With the state shifting its policy focus from case data to hospital data, what's happening in New York's microcluster strategy? We don't know. Cuomo has said in recent briefings that the strategy would be revised to factor in hospital data, but offered no details. No changes have been made this week to focus zones, and no new focus zones have been added, despite surging cases in many areas across the state that have been under watch as potential zones. The state's microcluster strategy isn't working, says Bill Hammond, senior health policy fellow at the Empire Center. More worrying still, Cuomo bent his own rules in downgrading a Brooklyn cluster zone, Hammond writes, allowing the neighborhood to move to a less restrictive yellow designation before state case targets for downgrading were met. Quote, "If the governor was trying to head off an adverse ruling by the Supreme Court, his strategy did not work. In a 5-4 ruling on Thanksgiving Eve, the justices struck down the cluster zone limits on religious gatherings as a violation of the First Amendment's protections of freedom of worship," unquote, Hammond writes. New York passed a milestone on December 3rd. The number of COVID-19 tests that have been done since the beginning of the pandemic is now greater than the number of people who live in New York State. New York State will join a federal program to vaccinate nursing home residents and staff, Cuomo said December 4th. The move will free up more of the state's allotment of vaccines for frontline health workers. About a third of the state's 700,000 healthcare workers are considered high risk, working in emergency rooms or other parts of the system where they are often in contact with COVID-19 patients, Cuomo said. New York State health officials expect to be able to vaccinate about a third of that third in the next 2 weeks. This week's Best Read on Vaccines, Stat News, has a deep dive on what the development of effective vaccines means for society and how we can make the most of them. "They're not a silver bullet," writes Helen Branswell. Quote, "If we're not careful, we could fail to take full advantage of the opportunity scientists and governments, pharmaceutical companies, and philanthropic foundations have created for us," unquote. One topic touched on in Stat's story and an issue of growing urgency, when will pregnant people be able to get a vaccine? It's not just a matter of priority and limited vaccine availability. The front-running vaccines haven't been tested on pregnant people in clinical trials, and there is debate among experts about whether they should be recommended during pregnancy. Vaccines might pose different risks to pregnant people or developing fetuses, but COVID-19 infections pose heightened risk to both. And then there's the matter of pregnant healthcare workers at risk. Stat reports that 3/4 of healthcare workers are women, and roughly 330,000 are either pregnant or breastfeeding. The CDC issued a new guidance this week on how to take community action to keep COVID at bay. Much of it reads like old news to those who have been following pandemic developments closely, and particularly the agency's recommendation that all Americans wear masks anytime they are indoors with non-household members or when a household member may be infected. Cuomo said December 4th that he will sign an executive order that changes the rent relief bill passed by the state legislature. Details are scarce at this point. The governor said only that the order will, quote, "reopen the application window and extend the eligibility requirements to help more New Yorkers," unquote. That expanded eligibility should help with a core problem in the initial bill, which appropriated $100 million in rental assistance, but only allocated $40 million of that total due to the income eligibility parameters of the law and technological and linguistic barriers to applying for aid. Back in July, CURB did a deep dive into the problems with the program. New test locations will soon be rolled out statewide, Cuomo announced on December 3rd. New York is partnering with Prescriptive Health to expand testing capacity in areas where testing is limited, and Prescriptive will deploy rapid test kits provided by New York State in those locations. One question we have at the River, how will the expanding role of rapid tests affect key COVID-19 data, like the positivity rate the state has been using as a rough guide to outbreak severity? Rapid tests are much more likely to return false negative results than PCR tests. In October, the state of Kentucky stopped counting them toward its calculation of positivity rates in order to standardize state data. The federal CDC may have shortened quarantine requirements this week, but New York State has not followed suit, and county health departments are struggling to convey to frustrated local residents that they still must follow 14-day quarantine periods if exposed to COVID-19. Quote, the New York State Department of Health has not adopted that, unquote, said Orange County Executive Steve Newhouse in his December 4th video briefing. Quote, we live in the state of New York. Elections have consequences, unquote. The New York Times conducted an informal survey of 700 epidemiologists, a redux of similar survey done in the spring. The paper found epidemiologists were a cautious bunch, acting more carefully in their personal lives than most Americans. They have also modified precautions as more is learned about COVID-19. Some reported they now worry less about, quote, socializing outdoors, touching surfaces, or sending young children to school, unquote, but are more worried about indoor air transmission and the dangers of not wearing masks. Only a small minority of the epidemiologists said normal life could restart in the summer. Most said that even with the vaccine, it would be a year or more for many activities to safely restart. The outbreak is getting worse in state prisons, too, reports Lawl.com. Some 20 state prisons currently have at least one active case among their inmate population. The Legal Aid Society is urging Governor Cuomo and the state prison department to release inmates who are vulnerable to the coronavirus. The resurgence of the virus in correctional facilities has made the question of when the incarcerated will get vaccinated even more urgent. We still don't know the answer. Inmates are not in the top tiers of federal vaccination criteria. The CDC has prioritized corrections officers in the first phase of immunizations, and the Associated Press reports that the federal prison system will set aside its initial allotment for prison employees as well. We still don't have enough data on the vaccines to know if they will stop transmission. It's possible they may stop people from becoming ill, but still allow them to become infected without symptoms. And if so, vaccinated guards could still bring COVID-19 into prisons and transmit it. The U.S. unemployment numbers for November were released December 4th, showing hiring continued to slow from its rapid clip over the summer. The country added 245,000 jobs, far fewer than the 610,000 added in October, edging the unemployment rate down to 0.2 percentage points to 6.7%. This is not necessarily bad news. The unemployment rate still fell, after all, and is dramatically lower than its peak of 14.9% in April. But other economic indicators show a worrying picture. The unemployment rate only counts people actively looking for jobs, missing out on most unemployed people, stay-at-home parents, people unable to work due to medical conditions, the incarcerated, most homeless people, and your friend Steve, who just lays on his parents' couch all day and takes bong hits. The unemployment population ratio captures these groups. It has now recovered more slowly than the unemployment rate and actually fell in November. Two possible explanations for people not seeking jobs: the fear of contracting COVID-19 and the need to stay home with children due to school closures. On December 4th, Secretary of Education Betsy DeVos extended the pause on student loan repayment through January 31st, an additional month of reprieve for borrowers. Interest rates will remain at zero during the freeze. Long-term symptoms in those who have recovered from active COVID-19 infection is a growing problem in the U.S. Leading public health officials recently convened for the federal government's first workshop on the issue, the New York Times reported December 4th. Quote, in an inadvertent but stark illustration of the difficulty of the recovery process, two of the four patients scheduled to speak at the meeting were unable to because they had recently been hospitalized, unquote, the Times reports. Bloomberg Law has a troubling report on COVID-19 survivors being denied new life insurance policies because they have previously tested positive for the virus. One former state insurance commissioner told the publication that he's, quote, not aware of any state regulations that stop insurance companies from underwriting against a disease like COVID-19, unquote. Now, the region-by-region roundup, starting with the lower Hudson Valley, where in Westchester County's the seven-day average positive test rate remained above 5%. County Executive George Latimer said in the December 4th coronavirus briefing, on December 3rd, 768 people tested positive in the county, 6.7% of total persons tested. As of December 2nd, 292 residents were hospitalized with the virus, up from 47 one month ago. But Latimer said that the county has, quote, not reached a point of crisis, unquote. in the availability of hospital beds and expects there to be no changes to the county's microclusters, one orange zone in Port Chester and five yellow zones, including one in Peekskill, where the seven-day rolling average of those tested is 10.10%. On December 4th, the Putnam County Department of Health addressed a question that's growing more salently by the day: when you should seek treatment at a hospital. County Health Commissioner Dr. Michael J. Nezawat advises that over-the-counter medicines and rest can subdue mild COVID-19 symptoms, though it's imperative to continue monitoring progress with a thermometer and a pulse oximeter, which measures a person's blood oxygen level and is available at most drugstores. Symptoms that demand immediate emergency attention include shortness of breath, persistent pain or pressure in the chest, bluish lips or face, the inability to wake or stay awake, and confusion. Quote, people coping with or recovering from COVID-19 should pay attention to their respiratory strength, unquote, Dr. Nezawat said. Quote, daily observation of personal breathing patterns such as rhythm, rate, and quality can help to determine when or if to seek medical care, unquote. Putnam also released an update to its coronavirus dashboard via Twitter on December 4th. Some of the numbers beggar belief. For example, the county says there are only 153 active cases, but Putnam reported 442 positive test results over the past week, which raises the question, how is the county's health department tracking active cases? By comparison, neighboring Westchester County is using all new cases in the past 2 weeks as a proxy for active infections. That leads to a current estimate of 6,746 active cases in Westchester County, some of whom are probably no longer infectious. But it's better to overestimate than underestimate, and it strains credulity that Putnam has just over 2% the number of active cases as the county bordering it to the south. Did Rockland County see a post-Thanksgiving COVID spike? Ask a headline in an article at lowhud.com that dives into the county's troubling numbers. In the week since Thanksgiving, active cases jumped 32% to 1,953, and 12 people have died. More troubling still is that if Rockland is seeing a surge of new cases as a result of Thanksgiving gatherings, we wouldn't even be seeing it yet. For the second day in a row, only a limited number of nurses at Montefiore New Rochelle Hospital were called into work. On Tuesday and Wednesday this past week, some 200 nurses went on strike amid a labor dispute with the hospital before seeking to return to work on Thursday. But in the 2 days since the strike, only a small number have been called in by hospital administration, despite what the nurses said was a typical patient workload. The union said that the move was retaliation for the strike. In the Mid-Hudson Valley, the coronavirus is continuing to spread rapidly in Ulster County, with 283 new cases reported in the last 3 days. Active cases set a new record December 4th with 1,212, double what it was 12 days ago. The previous peak of 1,009 was in the spring, though the positivity rate was likely higher then due to scarce testing. Quote, if we don't start to flatten the curve, this is going to be a very long and a very dark and a very difficult winter, unquote, County Executive Pat Ryan said during a December 3rd briefing. The county modeled how cases may rise in the following weeks and, quote, the best-case scenario still has us exceeding 5,000 cases by Christmas, unquote, according to Ryan, nearly 1,200 new cases in 22 days. Ryan also said that contact tracers in the county were being stretched thin, even with reinforcements from the state, and volunteers may once again be sought in the, quote, near future, unquote. He also warned of having unrealistic expectations for the first batch of vaccine doses, which will begin to be distributed in the state on December 15th. The state will receive enough vaccines for 170,000 people, and some simple math suggests only about 1,600 people in the county of 180,000 will receive vaccinations from the initial batch. Active cases in Ulster County are concentrated in New Paltz, which reported 165 on December 3rd. Town Supervisor Neil Bettitz told the Daily Freeman that the recent end-of-semester testing at SUNY New Paltz could not account for the surge of new cases and that he had not been informed of any super-spreader events, saying that the virus was, quote, likely being spread by small gatherings, unquote. 10 deaths have been reported from COVID-19 in Orange County over the last 4 days as hospitalizations continue to slowly rise, reaching 102 on December 4th, compared to 33 at the beginning of November. Orange County Executive Steve Newhouse got sassy in his December 4th briefing with plans to hold a protest at the County Department of Health to rally against schools closing throughout the fall. Quote, if you want to get out of the house and need a reason to do it. I have a ton of other things we could protest together, but the school district and what they're going through, what the health departments are going through, what first responders are going through, what hospitals are going through, give me a break. Some of these things I read boggle my mind, unquote. 12 of the 14 school districts in the county closed at least one of their schools at some point between September 15th and November 15th, according to Newhouse. A business in Middleton was issued a warning for price gouging on disinfectants, Newhouse also reported at the briefing, but he did not name the malefactor. Fireworks planned for the kickoff of this year's alternate winter walk in Hudson have been canceled, according to the Columbia paper, after County Health Commissioner Jack Mabb said the event could be, quote, a significant COVID-19 spreader. The alternative winter walk, a lower-key version of the annual event, will spread out from Saturday until Christmas Eve. Columbia County released its town-by-town breakdown of cumulative cases on December 4th. There were no new cases reported in nursing homes since last week, and the highest number of new cases were in Greenport with 12. Two mobile testing clinics have been scheduled in rural Columbia County. The first will be held in New Lebanon's Shatford Park, adjacent to the town hall, from 10 a.m. to noon on December 8th. The second will be held the following Tuesday, December 15th, at the A.B. Shaw Fire Company in Claverick from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. A form of ID is needed, as the clinics are only open to county residents. In the Catskills, Delaware County hit new records for both daily and active cases on December 4th, with 17 new cases for the day and a total of 87 known active cases in the county. Six county residents were hospitalized. Quote, multiple cases today and this week are linked to living room spread from Thanksgiving dinners and gatherings, unquote, officials said in an email to local reporters. Neighboring Delaware and Sullivan counties are both small rural counties which residents often have to leave for medical care. Both counties publish a daily count of COVID-19 hospitalizations. It's tempting to compare the two to see how each are doing, but because the counties report data in different ways, those numbers mean very different things in each place. Sullivan County health officials say they are counting only people hospitalized in the county, which may mean the county's number is substantially lower than the number of hospitalizations coming from local outbreaks. Delaware health officials say their daily count is the number of county residents who are in the hospital with COVID-19, most likely in other counties with larger urban centers. It's a microcosm of the data problems we're seeing everywhere, as there is no standard method that different health departments are using to track the pandemic.